Piano Jazz is made possible by the National Endowment for the Arts, the Joseph Drown Foundation, the Baldwin Piano Company, Porter's Books and Music, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. Today we pay tribute to violin jazz legend Johnny Frigo, who passed away in 2007. This program originally aired in the fall of 2000.
Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Johnny Frigo, possibly the greatest living jazz violinist. He's nothing short of a violin icon. He's soulful, swinging, and joyful. And that might well describe his music, plus great technique to burn. And burn he does. Johnny, how are you?
I'm fine. Those are nice words. Thank you very much.
Well, it's true.
Can you live up to them?
Well, you don't have to be modest, because I know you can. And it's terrible the way we've seen each other all these years, the first chance we've had to play together.
That's right, like passing ships in the night.
Yeah, something like that.
You're there and I'm here, and we never hooked up.
But now we hooked up. But I've realized you're from Chicago, like all the time you were born in Chicago, lived in Chicago. How did you get started studying the violin?
My folks came from Italy. My mother was born in Venice, and somehow she got here to Chicago. And when we were very young, we were super poor, and I had no idea what music was, but after school, I used to go through the alleys looking for junk and saving it for the little ragman who came out with on Saturday with the horse and wagon and his little beard saying, "Rags and old iron," and I couldn't wait till he came, because I would sell him my weekly collection of junk. And I would make 25 cents, sometimes 35 cents if I found copper.
Good money in those days.
Yeah. So his son was a violin student who wanted to teach. He said to my mother, "You know, Johnny has long fingers. He would be a good violin player. And my son is a teacher, and he could teach Johnny." And my mother said, "Well, we have no money for that." He said, "Well, it's 25 cents a lesson." So I started studying with him when I was 7 1/2 to 11. That's 3 1/2 years. That's all the training ever had in my life.
That's amazing. But meanwhile, you had to go out every day and make your pile of junk so you could get the 25 cents.
A lesson.
So you were really paying for your own lessons at age 7.
Well,
amazing.
In a way, that's true.
Yeah, this is so interesting. But we've got to play a song. We absolutely have to play. I'm dying to hear you. What would you like to do? What's one of your?
Well, let's start with maybe one of the just medium tempo ballads.
Okay.
Lover Man.
Wonderful tune. Now, do you want to count this off for me, and shall I do a little intro?
About 1, 2, 3, 4... Thank you.
perfect. You know, that's such a beautiful tune, and for some reason or other, it doesn't get played that much anymore, so I'm glad to hear you do it. And by the way, I was poking through some of your CDs, and you know millions of tunes. Now, when you were studying with the Ragman's son, what did he... You weren't playing pop tunes of the day or anything, were you?
No, he gave me a book. It was called The Kreutzer Exercises, and just a lot of arpeggios and different scales and things.
But then you went to school and you started on the tuba.
Yeah, in junior high school, they had no orchestra. So they had a little, 10-piece band or something, Curtis Junior High School. And the only instrument that was still left that nobody wanted to play was the tuba. So I was stuck with playing the tuba and just puffing away, and not even knowing how to really read the music. And when the transfer came that I went into high school, that wasn't very romantic to be playing the tuba when you get to be like 14 and 15, you're starting to think about girls or whatever. And somebody suggested a string bass instead of the tuba, because then you can play in a dance band and things like that. So I found some old string bass that some old Italian fellow had that was gathering dust, and only had three strings on it, and the gut G string was tied in a knot, which is unbelievable, but it was tied in a knot when it got past the bridge. And I just started to slap away on that, thinking nothing of it. And what was so prophetic about that was that for the next, all my life, over 50 years, a half a century, that's where I made 90% of my living, playing bass.
Well, I remember seeing you playing bass when you formed that group, the Soft Winds.
Oh, listen.
It was you and Herb Ellis and Lou Carter.
Right.
I mean, I've always known you as playing bass. I didn't really know that you had this new life as a fiddle player until fairly recently.
Even then, my violin was just gathering dust all that time. And before the Soft Winds, Lou Carter and Herb Ellis and I were the rhythm section of Jimmy Dorsey's band.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, we were the, except for the drummer, Carl Kiffey, we were the rhythm section, and we were playing at the Paramount Theater. That was my last job with Jimmy Dorsey. Jimmy told us during that performance that he's going to take about a month break or a month and a half break, and I didn't want to be out of work. And years ago, I played at a place in Buffalo, the Stuyvesant Hotel.
Yeah.
And I said, why don't we form a trio? I'm going to call this Darwin Martin, and I'm sure he's going to get us a job at the Stuyvesant Hotel. So that's how I formed the Soft Winds Trio.
You were a young guy then. I mean,
yeah,
what, 20s or
something? I'm talking 1947. So we formed this trio. And then after, it was a very polished trio. It was a very beautiful trio.
I remember.
Yeah, and we made some records. And we decided to write songs because Lou Carter was sort of a good comic. He wrote a lot of comic parodies.
Yeah, The Rose Between My Toes.
From Walking Through the Hot House with You, Nellie.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And so I made what ended up being not the choicest sentence I ever said, but I said, anything we write, let's split the royalties three ways. So it happened that in 1947 I wrote this song. I had this idea, Smooth Road, Clear Day, But Why Am I the Only One Traveling This Way? You know, how strange the road to love should be so easy. Can there be a detour ahead? I said, hey, that's a great idea. So I wrote Detour Ahead. And when we got together, we started rehearsing it. And Lou came up with some ideas and a couple of chord changes and probably a lyric or two. I'm not quite sure. But basically, it was my song, lyrics and music, with Herbie and Lou polishing it up and make it sound like it does today. And for some reason, I was lucky enough to have Billie Holiday record it.
I remember that. I mean, I've heard it. Well, I guess there's nothing for it but for us to play that tune now, I would think.
Well,
what do you think?
Do that now.
I mean, but you're talking about it. I think everybody's all agog to hear it.
Okay.
Okay. You know, that's such a beautiful tune, and I did hear Billy do it, among other people.
Yeah.
You know what you've got to do now. I know you have another hit tune in you. You're going to have to do that. If not today, tomorrow, well, you're going to get another hit tune.
I have part of it written. In fact, you want to hear the part that I have written right now. It's very short. Does that sound like anything else? Does that sound like something else?
No. I think you'd better keep that to yourself for a while, or somebody might steal it. But meanwhile, there's a lot more to come with Johnny Frigo. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. I just thought of something so funny. You were playing with a band in the early days, in the days of the gangsters, and you were playing in some club where Al Capone came in.
Oh, I remember what you're saying. Yeah, it was Club Citro at Taylor and Halstead. And I was still in high school, and I didn't tell them how old I was because they wouldn't have let me play because I was still in school. And I remember at one moment I was singing with Al Deem and his orchestra on KYW, and I was singing a song called 1 Minute to One, and I cracked my voice on a high note, and I think it was the bouncer said, "Don't sing no more," one of those things. So the next night, I thought he meant don't sing that song anymore, and I started singing a song, and I got whacked on the back of the neck. He grabbed me by my collar while we were broadcasting and dragged me off the bandstand and across the dance floor on the back of my heels. So
I'm sure that was a gangster-run club then, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then in the old days, you know, the F-holes that you have in the bass, they look like S's.
Yeah,
S's.
Sure.
Yeah, a lot of people used to throw coins in there. Instead of a tip jar, they'd put it in your bass.
Coins, indeed. They should put $50 bills in there.
Well, so this one time, somebody put a bill in there, and I don't know, but then at night, two people have to hold up the bass upside down and shake it, and then when you have to get a fork or something and pull up. And the next week or a couple of weeks later, I said, "Yeah, somebody put I think it was a $5 or $10 bill in my bass." And he said, "That was Al Capone."
See, well, he used to do that. He liked a tune. Jimmy used to play for him too, and he would come in with a mob of people. And he liked My Gal Sal. So every time he came in, Jimmy would play that, and they would all get $50. But whether or not somebody put any money in the F-holes of the bass, I don't know. I can just imagine Jim Lanigan having to turn his bass upside down. But, you know, we could go on forever with these club stories, but let's do a tune. Let's do a tune. What would you like?
No, we played
Cheek to Cheek.
We played, because we played a couple of ballads so far.
Cheek to Cheek would be a little up, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Well, that's such a good tune to play on. And, you know, I wonder from time to time why there are not more jazz violinists. I mean, there haven't been very many in the history of the music.
No, well, they're coming up like mushrooms now.
Are they?
After a rainy morning, believe me. but the reason it's so difficult, violin in itself is so difficult. And in order to even get a good sound, most of the fiddle players have studied, and they're into that academic world of theirs where they have to hold the violin a certain way, stroke a certain way, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that.
Well, how did you get away from all that and do your own
thing?
Because
when I was still a fledgling in a way, I started playing bass in high school, and my whole career started to float away from the violin, and I was playing in like little jazz groups and like playing bass with Jimmy Dorsey.
Yeah, but when you came back to the violin in the 80s, did you just pick it up like?
Well, I did play sporadically through those years, but I didn't play that often. I looked like a dilettante. I never practiced at home. I never bought records. I was in by poetry and painting pictures. You know.
Well, how'd you learn all these tunes then?
Playing through the ears with playing bass.
Oh, of course, playing bass. Yeah, right.
So I knew all the chord changes, but I never knew all the real. I hate to play a ballad and not play the exact melody. You know, you're playing something like a. So a lot of singers do. They do this. They go. But they lose that pretty. Yeah.
Oh, I know. I hear that a lot.
So I took a job with an accordion player, incognito.
You did?
We got out the airport, stroll around the tables. Winter mornings, I'd be working all night at Mr. Kelly's, and then I'd have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go through the snow and play strolling around the tables with an accordion player, Rino Tondelli, just so I could learn all those melodies and get my violin chops back together again after having played bass all that time.
Well, actually, that was a good way, come to think of it.
Yes, it was.
It was a good way. Well, we don't need an accordion player. You've got me. Let's play a tune. You know what we could do? That wonderful Django Reinhardt tune, Nuage, we could do that.
I'd love to do that.
It's funny, I learned that in England. I used to hear the actual group on the BBC.
Oh, that had to be beautiful.
It was, and then in World War II, I was over there, and Jimmy and I were visiting Charles Delaunay, and Django was there in the apartment, so you can imagine how thrilled I was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do Nuage.
All right, here we go.
You know, that's probably one of the nicest versions of Nuage I've ever heard. You must really love that tune.
Write that down.
All right, but for a fee. I mean, I'll write you a whole new press kit. But I think that takes real mastery of the instrument to play a slow ballad in that quiet way. It's just unbelievable. And the ending, of course.
Yeah. And it's not so much that I played it quietly, but I put the mute on so I can actually dig in soulfully and still not have it sound loud.
Oh, is that what you... Oh, that's right, I forgot there's a mute in there, which gives you a whole different effect. But...
On the high note, on the very end, I thought my nose was going to start bleeding.
Yeah, I was worried about you for a moment, but I thought, well, I better come in and play something, otherwise he's going to keep going for 10 more minutes. You know, we'll have more in a minute. My guest is Johnny Frigo. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company.